Welcome back to Broken Rice Podcast. We are at season two, 4 years later. I'm Putri.
And I'm Alvis, and we're so excited to be back. I feel like it's been such a long time, and it's going to feel so clunky, but honestly, we're probably just going to get right into it.
Yeah. I also feel like we were such different people 4 years ago. And yeah. Now we're like completely, I feel like we have our own expectations of what the success of this podcast looks like. But being that we've been revisiting our old episodes, Alvis has reminded me that we're pretty good at this. So I think we should be okay. It'll just be a little bumpy and funky in the beginning.
Yeah. So the thing that I really appreciated about listening to the first episode was that we like laid out what the expectation was and what our intentions were with the podcast. I guess I kind of want to reiterate it now because I was feeling a little bit iffy going into this. But then after I listened to it, I was like, oh, it's always been about us. And it's always been about creating a space for us and creating vulnerability, like building a digital community, just talking about things that like people wouldn't otherwise want to talk about or can talk about with other people. And what I also appreciated was like us both being like, it's okay to make mistakes. Like it's okay to be like problematic and like fix it later because we're like, like real ass people who make real mistakes. Yeah. And that kind of, it gave me a lot of like permission to be like, okay, you can go into this and not have to like feel like you have to be perfect. That was the common theme with that first episode.
Yeah, when I was re-listening to it, and I remember us pre-apologizing for some of the bullshit that we'll probably experience throughout the podcast and just like the mistakes and stuff, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I think at least if we get called out or if, you know, people are like, hey, that wasn't the right thing, that at the end of it all, we know as people will own up to it and hold ourselves accountable for that. So yes, with that being said, I'm very excited.
I listened to a couple of the episodes, and at the end of the episodes, we'd be like, if you want to call us out, reach out to us on brokenricepod@gmail.com. So we were like openly inviting people to be like, hey, like be a part of this conversation. And that's what made it feel good. So I'm hoping that we can kind of settle into that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we haven't logged in to it.
You know, I logged into it for the first time a couple of days ago, and I was just like, oh, we have some new followers.
Oh, and my then, God, speaking of, should we do our shout out?
Yeah.
So because we were finally revisiting everything, we logged into our accounts and everything like that. And so I was like, oh my gosh, Alvis, guess who our biggest demographic was for our last episode? And he was like, I was like, you're never going to guess. It was a lot of people from India. And at first I was like, oh, is it because my last name is Surya? I know it's an Indian-based last name, but I really think we just resonate with people of India. So shout out to the people of India.
Yeah, shout out to India, because it wasn't even just one or two people. It was like, what were the metrics? Like thousands of downloads.
Yeah, it was like thousands of people from different parts of India too. So that was amazing to even see. So I'm glad we're reaching people across the entire globe.
I guess my question is like, is it even real? Or like what is that exactly?
I really hope you guys are bots. Please don't be bots.
And then Matia was like, oh, aren't those just people trying to steal your voices and using it for something else? I was like, why would you say that?
Why would you say that to us? Don't say that to us, please.
We're just going to believe that it's real people.
Okay. A win is a win.
Exactly. So essentially, like, this first episode is going to be kind of like, or this returning episode is going to be kind of like our first episode where we talk about, like, what we've been doing for the past 4 years. I feel like there's, like, a lot of catching up to do and a lot has happened. So to kind of, like, get on the same page again and also for us to get on the same page with each other because our lives have just, like, gone in completely different directions. So I think it's a really good way to kind of like touch base and just talk about some of these things that like, there are some things that have happened to me in my life that there's nobody else that I would have wanted to talk to besides Putri. And it's hard because we're just so far away. So I'm excited to kind of delve into some of these topics, even though it's been years.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny because, like, you, our audience, see that we have not been active for the past 4 years. And in those 4 years, me and Alvis have also been, obviously not distant in the heart, but, like, distantly. And we've literally have had such different lives. So we literally could not, like, we did not have an opportunity to sit down and actually do an episode because our lives were running at 100 miles per hour in, like, such different directions. So when Alvis, when we were talking and brainstorming about what we were going to talk about the first episode, and he said, like, he asked me, what was your goal? And it was honestly, like he mentioned before, like, reconnecting with each other again. And the fact that, you know, this kind of forces us to be besties again. Because we just have not, like, I used to talk to this man every single day, like, literally every single day, every waking moment. Yeah. And then our lives just went into such different directions. And so I really just want our goal, my goal, to just reconnect with you and just put a routine conversation time for the both of us and just really catch up. And mm-hmm. And I hope everyone listening enjoys what we have to say.
Yeah, I agree. I was listening to the last episode that we recorded, and we were talking a lot about, what does community look like for you? What does home look like for you? And I know that we don't talk every day anymore, but, like, when I listen to that episode, it's still the same sentiment. Like, when I say I'm going to go home and visit my family, I mean my family, my biological family, but I also mean you and Mati and now Keshi. Like, you know, I always make it a point to come over and visit because you guys are my family, and I love you guys so dearly. And that's the only reason why I come back, you know? Like, I'm not coming back for, you know, I'm kind of coming back for Korean barbecue because there's nowhere else that has good Korean barbecue. But besides that, yeah, my family.
Period. But yeah, spoiler alert, I am a mom now. That is a big thing that has changed the last 4 years. I am a mom now, and that is my son, Keshi, that Alvis had mentioned. So that is something that we're going to talk about, too, in this new season, and just where we are as, like, individuals.
Yeah. I guess, well, going back to your point about what are some of our other goals with restarting this podcast, other than reconnecting with each other, I do feel like the last time that we recorded, we were under Trump's presidency. So, you know, history repeats itself. And I feel like it's really important to, again, create the space to talk about some of these more difficult or maybe even, like, debilitating conversations. And yeah, when I was listening back to some of the stuff we were talking about, I was like, damn, we really got into it. And this was really important for not only us to talk to each other about it, but for other people. And I remember getting that feedback too from other people. So I think that, like, everyone saying that organizing and building community and just being close to your people is really important right now. And I do think that this is a really great outlet for it. And we won't get into, like, any of the really heavy topics today, but I'm sure we will in future episodes.
Yeah.
So a lot of shit has happened and a lot of shit is happening. I think that what we should do is, let's kind of go through what we did last time. We're like, what are the big major life events that have happened to you in the last 4 years? And I know that's such a loaded question, but let's hear it.
Okay. Should I just get started on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Was I married already? Yes, I was married already. Yeah. Because that episode of you talking about how monogamy is a scam.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I'm a married cis woman, monogamous ass bitch in a heterosexual relationship. But now, fast forward to 4 years later, I am now a mother, as I mentioned before, and it's been such a whirlwind. And before becoming a mother, I think I didn't realize how scary entering motherhood was with the amount of childhood trauma that I have endured growing up. And so as soon as I gave birth, well, okay, let's start from, let's give a little synopsis. I did give birth two months early. So I had a NICU baby. And so for a really long time, or for 2 months, Keshi was in the NICU. And during that 2 months, I was basically like, I went through this traumatic birth experience and then came home with no baby. And I think for that duration, it was such a hard time for me because I felt as though I just went through this crazy experience and I had all these like medical instruments inside of me and like, so many people touching my body. I was exposed for an entire week when I was in the hospital. And so it just felt like my body was no longer my body. And then when I didn't go home with the baby, I would still go home and I would have to pump every 3 hours. So I'm like supplying milk for him. And basically I felt as though I was this vessel and I was not living for myself anymore. My body no longer belonged to me. And so as soon as I felt that trauma and that just anxiety, I immediately, God bless my OBGYN. She is like literally my biggest advocate because my first postpartum exam that I went to her, I had told her I like broke down and I was like, I don't think I'm ready for you to exam me. Like this feels really traumatic to my body and yada, yada, yada. And then she was such an angel and went through everything so quickly and so gently. And then as soon as we were done, she's like, okay, now that we're done with the physical part, what is going on with you? What's up? Like, do you need me to rush like something to the psychiatry department? Do you need a therapist? And I'm like, yes, as soon as possible, I need a therapist. And within a week, she helped me get a therapist. And with the grace of God, I'm here today. But that was a lot of healing my inner child and working through that and just working through all the trauma and working through finding my body again, like my physical body. It felt like my soul was like floating in the ether and my body was just trying to find my soul again. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think that's where I'm at mentally. I love being a mom. I love my toddler. I think I've never felt so happy and content in my life. Like I wake up and I'm like, is this what happiness is supposed to feel like? And I know,
oh my gosh,
I know. And I know Alvis is going to kill me when I say this because this is something that he literally has to shake me about. But I'm like, is my luck going to run out?
Oh,
like,
wow. I haven't heard you say that in so long.
I'm like, is my luck going to run out? This life right now is too good to be true. Something is bound to happen. But I think through therapy and just having such a great support system that I'm just really taking my life day by day and just kind of like really honing everything in. But yeah, this is the happiest I've ever been in my entire life. And I've never felt so confident to say that ever. But yeah. Wow.
That is so crazy. I mean, I definitely feel really emotional listening to you talk about it. I mean, we've talked about some of this stuff before, but I think that hearing it in like completion like that is really interesting. But I don't know. I'm kind of interested to know more about like what postpartum depression was like and how you got out of that. Because that's something that a lot of people don't talk about.
Yeah. It was really hard because I think too, a lot of people don't know this, but men also can kind of go through postpartum. And I think I was so honed in on like, Mati can one day tell his side of the story. But, you know, as a mom who has carried this baby inside of me, I have that natural emotion and instant love for the baby. And for the first couple months, Mati's like, I don't know this stranger. I don't know if love this stranger. Like, I don't know if I love him. Yeah. And so I think for a while, what I used to do was kind of push a lot of the, like, when Keshi would be crying or whatever, I would kind of push that and be like, oh, you should calm him down and stuff, so he would feel connected. And so I think in turn that kind of bit me on the ass, because then Keshi just really favored his dad. And so for a while it felt as though, like, I was really just that vessel, like, just like this body living in this world. And I was like, oh my god, now my kid doesn't like me, like,
oh my god,
what is going on? I know. So it was really, really hard. And yeah, I think it was just more so like moments of, am I doing this right? Like, am I, like, I had trouble breastfeeding too. He didn't really like my boob. So I felt as though, oh, this is my only chance to really bond with my baby, yet he wants nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. And so that was really tough too. So going through therapy and just like letting it all out and having her explain to me that it's really just this internal pressure and expectations of society. Mm-hmm. And like, hey, like, you, at the end of the day, what matters most to you is how much you prioritize your son. And if those are the needs that your son needs, and it might not be you sometimes, that's okay. You being selfless is still a act of love and care for your child. And so I really had to put into that perspective that I want the best for my baby. I think that's what I just kept trying to tell myself. And then on top of that, I think, honestly, work really saved me too. I think the fact that I, yeah, which is really crazy, because I think the fact that I, when I went back to work, I was like, oh, this is the life I had before Keshi. Like, this is who I was before Keshi. This is my own thing. I am important in some type of environment, you know? And I am being, like, people are praising me, obviously, you're being such a good mom, blah, 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 blah. But I think when your child isn't providing you that reassurance, it's a lot different. Mm-hmm. But then when I went back to work, I was like, right, this is who I am. Like, this is who I wore. And I think that surprisingly really grounded me too. Like, mm-hmm. kind of putting my place in society again. Because you literally feel like you're in on an island after you bring a child home. You're like, one, you don't really want a lot of people around to prevent him from getting sick, so it gets really lonely. And then, like, when people are over, they're wearing masks and doing the whole washing hands and all that, and it just feels so isolating sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's just like you live on this island, and it's just, it's a lot of loneliness, a lot of anxiety, a lot of like, am I made for this? Am I cut out to be a mom? Like, I've wanted to be a mom for so long, and here I am doing it, and I don't even think I'm doing it right, or like I'm doing it well. So yeah, I think honestly being back at work really grounded me, and when we started having people over more really grounded me. And I think once Keshi started getting used to being home and just being in this world, we all started finding a flow and just a routine that really helped us. So yeah, I mean, I think that's where we are. I mean, we can probably get into it deeper on, mm-hmm. I can talk for hours about postpartum, but it's really tough, and really don't wish it upon anybody. But the fact that I already had mental illness before, I kind of already prepped myself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you knew where to go. You knew where to go, and you knew what you needed. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I had my resources. So,
yeah, for sure.
That's that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you needed to root yourself in a sense of identity that was outside of being this vessel, or like being a mother. But like,
yeah.
I guess, I mean, it's been 2 years now. So, I mean, I definitely feel like watching you kind of do things again that are just for yourself has been really great. Like, I know that you're really into Pilates now.
Yeah, and I'm like, a Pilates princess.
Yeah, and your snatch, you look great. But yeah, I mean, are there some other things that you are like doing or have chosen that are also just, like just for you?
No. I think you know what it is? I think having a really good partner has helped me like through postpartum. I see other mom friends go through it with a very not so great partner, or at least not a very active partner in parenthood. And I think the fact that Mati gives me the space to be able to do what I need to do and love my me time and just like give me that an opportunity. And I also don't even need to tell him what to do or like give him directions on how to take care of our kid. Like that's such a big part of postpartum too. It's like having an active partner and making sure not only is the baby happy, but the mom is happy. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really have anything else that I'm doing for myself. I think it's the fact that I have such a great support system that I have the option to do things for myself. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Like not a lot of moms have that opportunity or have that space to do that. So I think just having that option, honestly, is so like people like I sometimes take that for granted, and that's something that I'm so grateful for.
Yeah. I mean, motherhood is a full-time job. Like, I mean, more than a full-time job. I don't even know how you do it, and you still have to work. Like, that's crazy. But I do remember a while ago, we used to talk about what our like dreams and aspirations were, and you were like, I just want to be a mom. You're like, I don't care about having a good job. I don't care about climbing the ladder. Like, I want to be a mother. I was like, slay. Because that's real as fuck. And the thing is, you're killing it. Like, you're so good at it. And I know that like you just said, like, am I doing a good job or am I cut out for this or whatever? And I hope at this point you do feel that validation, especially with seeing your child being raised happily and healthy and have such a great personality and just, like, be, like, fearless. I think that what you and Mati are doing, and I've said this to you before, like, I wish that my parents were the type of parents that you guys are. And that's really... No, it's true, because it's like there's so much love, there's so much empathy, there's so much understanding, there's so much forgiveness. Like, I'm just like a fly on the wall, you know, because like, you know, I'm weird with babies still. But like when I watch you guys, I'm just like, oh wow, they know what the fuck they're doing. And I think it's really
amazing. I know. No, when we were eating at Eat Aloud, when you were here last time, and you like you were just watching me and Keshi, and you just said, this doesn't feel like this is your first kid. This feels like you know what you're doing. Honestly, mm-hmm. I keep that with me every single time I feel like I'm like going crazy or like I feel like I'm doing something wrong. I'm like, you know, Alvis never sees this a lot when he's like, he's never here to see this. And the fact that he just says this, like the time that he comes and visits us, it feels really nice.
Yeah, because I don't, you know, sometimes you see some parents interact with their kids one time and you're just like, like it is like this is a very organic couple of times that I've seen you interact with your family, and it's just like, oh, okay, they're fine, they'll be fine.
I know. I think I'm doing a pretty good job now, and I feel more confident as a mom now. I think it's a, like, I look at Keshi and he's just, like you said, so resilient, so confident, so fearless. Mm-hmm. Honestly, that is a testament to me and Mati's parenting. Yeah. You know? And like, I'm like, yes, that every kid's temperament is different, but at the end of the day, I'm like, I think I am doing something right. He's such a polite, good kid. And I'm like, this is really a testament to me and Mati. And raising him is a letter to my inner child. And I say this all the time. Like, I just want to, like, give him all the forgiveness and the space for him to feel as though that he can always come to me and all that. So, mm-hmm. I think Thanks.
Of course, I so mean it.
Okay, enough about me. Let's talk about you, my little chef.
Okay. Obviously a lot has
Because wait, last
happened.
time, yeah, the last time you were still in Wisconsin. So let's talk about that. Your big move to Chicago. So come on, let's get started.
The past 4 years, honestly, really crazy. I feel like my life has changed. My life has changed probably like every year that the years have gone by. And it's been really overwhelming, but it's been really amazing seeing what I've been able to achieve. But let me just start from the beginning
Yes,
because
please.
there's just so much. So basically, it was interesting listening to our last episode because you could kind of see like my downfall happening because I was like, yeah, my boss is a narcissist, like work is really hard, like it got worse after that for sure. And like,
Yes, I very much remember.
yeah, honestly, remind me, because let me kind of recount what I experienced and then tell me what you saw, because
Okay.
it was such a dark time of my life that, and I never thought that I would be there again, because I've
Yeah.
been through those dark moments a lot. And I thought that once I moved away from home, once I got a different job, like I would be happy or whatever, but that's just simply was not the case.
Yeah.
But yeah. So essentially I took Jess's advice and I took short-term disability because I got so depressed. Every single day I went to that job. So for context, I was a food scientist at this corporate food conglomerate. They have like a lot of products and a lot of the food supply, but you wouldn't ever really hear their name because they're like an ingredient supplier.
Yes.
So I was doing work for them, but like I felt like I had a lot of imposter syndrome, and then they kept throwing me into projects that I wasn't really equipped for. And like I was a microbiologist, and I was get this is a new job as a food scientist. And I like was really clear like with my boss. I was like, hey, are there any resources I could use to like get caught up? Like I'm doing this for the first time, all this other stuff. And when I was talking to some of my other coworkers about it, they're like, oh, that's just how it works here. It's sink or swim. I was like, what the heck? So I
Yeah.
wasn't getting any support. And I remember I would be working like 15 hours a day, just fucking scrambling, trying to figure out what I was doing. And when I did want to ask for help, my coworkers would be like, it's not a good idea to ask for help. It was just very toxic. On top of the toxic work environment and then being in Wisconsin, not having my community, not having other people of color or even queer people around me, like Wisconsin, I was living in Madison for context. The way that people describe Wisconsin is like they're a very like not in my backyard type of community. Like they have BLM murals and they have pride stuff everywhere, and they kind of advertise themselves as this very liberal, very progressive city, but like once shit goes down, it's like I don't know, because it's just fake. And I just
Yeah.
remember I stuck out like a sore thumb, and I remember people like once I was at the farmer's market and I got stopped on the side of the street, and this girl was like, excuse me, I love this, like this whole look. I was wearing a t-shirt and jeans. Like I was like, what exactly is this? Asian? Gay? Like it was like I and this is the thing, it wasn't malicious,
Yeah.
but it's also very isolating. And like
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of friends, and granted, it was my first time living alone. I had a beautiful apartment. I had disposable income. It was the most money I had ever been making, but it just was not worth it, especially
Yeah.
with the working conditions. Like I would be having panic attacks before every meeting, and I remember going to the doctor because I was just like, it's time to get on antidepressants. And like we had talked about this before where I was like, oh, I'm depressed and I should probably give it a try. But it got so bad that I was having suicidal ideation. And it was scary because I would be having full-on panic attacks before meetings. So I went to the doctor, they put me on Zoloft, and then they also gave me propranolol. And they're like, this is for you to stop your heart from racing, but you're just putting a band-aid over a bigger issue, which you know, like being crushed under the weight of capitalism, essentially. And like, and by that, I mean, being in this corporate structure, having to compromise my own identity, having to compromise like the way that I speak. And it was just very oppressive. So I would leave that job every day being like, I cannot do this again tomorrow. And I would be driving to work sometimes being like, what if I just crash my car right now? And I remember like being in the Midwest, there's tornadoes and shit all the time. So I remember I got a tornado warning on my phone in the middle of the night, and they're like, yeah, like get to the bottom floor, seek shelter. And I was on the top floor of my apartment complex, and I was like, if this tornado takes me out, I won't have to go to work tomorrow. It was bad.
Yeah, I don't mean to laugh, but my gosh, what a dark time we were
I know.
It's kind of insane. Like, I think it was, like, the same time we were both, like, just going through it. And we were, I feel like we were just, like, two little threads, like, trying to hold on to each other.
Oh, my God, I know. We were. It was scary. And so, like, there's more to say about that, obviously, but... Yeah. I mean, I told you about all this while it was happening, right?
Yeah. I think that's why we were so dependent on each other at that time.
Yeah.
Because we were both just like so fucked. And I think.
Oh, because you were having the same problems at work too, right?
Yes. No. I was just depressed.
Oh.
It was just like, it had nothing to do with work. I was just so depressed. Mm. And I think we were both just like, we were each other's safe space for how, like,
for sure,
mentally fucked we were in the head. But no, I think everything you just recounted from that time is exactly how I remember it. You were just not yourself at all. Yeah. You felt so lonely. You were like, how long am I supposed to stay here for? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, girl, I don't know. What do you want to do? And I remember you having those panic attacks before even meeting your manager and just like sitting there and just being like, I have no idea what I'm doing and I have no resources. And like, I know I can be the best that I could be, but there's nothing, like, there's no like reassurance that I have in this position. And so, yeah, no, I think everything you said was pretty spot on. And
yeah,
it was a very dark time, I will say.
It was, honestly. And like, obviously, I'm really happy that you were there for me, and I had other people back home who were there for me. Yeah. But like, I was fucking going through it. So it was at that point where I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. So I ended up taking short-term disability, and I was on disability for like 6 months. Like, I left out of the blue, and I remember my manager called me and she was being real shady about it.
Wait, I remember that.
Like, she said, like, the thing is, when you go on disability, you have a third party that represents you, so you don't have to tell them anything. But she called me because she had way too much access to me, first of all. But she was like, hey, I saw that you just submitted this thing. And I was like, yeah, like, I'm sorry to like leave all my projects undone, but this is just like something that I have to do to take care of myself. And she was like, I mean, it's not ideal. I was like, okay, bitch. Like, are you kidding me?
You are, like, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me about that, and I'm like, that's actually insane. Never go back.
Yeah. And I remember she was like, well, what we can do is, you know, spend the next couple of days just uploading everything that you have into the shared drive. So like, if we need to like complete the projects, then, you know, somebody can take over. Not saying that you're not going to come back, but, you know, just in case. It was just like really weird and
so
not empathetic at all.
So
I mean,
ominous.
she was fucking horrible. And the thing is, when I started, 5 people left under her, and we all just started sending complaints to HR about her. But that's the thing about HR. They're not there to protect you. They're there to protect the company. So that was a whole thing.
I wonder if she's still there.
I bet she is, honestly. I think she is, but whatever.
You
fuck her.
You have to have that attitude in corporate America sometimes to really make it, which sucks.
She was girl bossing hard.
Girl, like, bossing so close to the sun.
Girl, she was in the sun. She was the sun. And she was burning everybody alive. I felt so oppressed by her.
Oh my god, no, I remember that. I was like, you have to leave. This is not healthy anymore.
Yeah, it was bad. But
you didn't
anyway.
Come back, right? Like, you didn't back from the leave. Okay.
So, yeah, I didn't come back. And it was like, it was a whole thing. And I was scared because I'm just like, are they going to, like, make me pay back my bonus if I don't come back? And am I going to be able to get another job if I just leave this job randomly? And just all this other stuff. But when I took my leave, I took a sabbatical in California because I called my sister, my oldest sister. I told her what happened. And, you know, my oldest sister, Alita, she's the oldest of the family, so you can relate. But she was like, just move in with me. She's like, you could just, you know, you can leave Wisconsin because my lease was ending and you can move in with me and just stay with me until you figure it out, which was really nice. Like, I'm glad that my siblings are such a big safety net for me because I was going through it. But I was like, you know, let me just, like, come for a little bit and then I'll figure it out. So I went to LA, I stayed with my sister. Luckily, I have a lot of my friends there and a lot of my chosen family there too. So I really recuperated. And I was supposed to be there for like a week, but I remember when the week was up, I was like, I'm not getting on that fucking plane back to Wisconsin. So I missed my flight on purpose and I stayed for 6 more weeks after that. And the whole time, like, I really prayed on it. I was just like, somebody, ancestors, universe, please give me a sign and tell me what the fuck I'm supposed to do, because I do not know what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I did keep seeing signs. Like, I used to not be an angel numbers girl, but I started seeing hella angel numbers everywhere. And it got to the point where it was, like, so apparent that it wasn't just a coincidence anymore. So I had to look it up and be like, what is this exactly? What are my guardian angels trying to tell me? And I guess after seeing that so many times and kind of like feeling a little bit more rooted and protected spiritually, especially, I made the decision to move to Chicago because I'm like, I'm not moving back to Virginia and I'm not staying in Madison. So I remember I left and I didn't have a job, but I went and everything suddenly started to work out in my favor and everything started to make more sense. And yeah, I was like, I'm going to move to Chicago and I'm going to apply for food science jobs, but I'm also going to apply for chef jobs because I was literally at the lowest point in my life where I was like, I have nothing to lose. So let me just try to follow my dreams, because if not now, then when? So I left it up to the universe. I was applying for both, and I applied for a job, a line cook job at this caviar bar, and they got back to me like the day after, and it was a friend of a friend that recommended it to me. So like everything just started happening. Even the way that I came to Chicago, like living with Kenny, my roommate now, and one of my closest friends now, it was very serendipitous, us moving at the exact same time and kind of going through this process at the same time. Oh my god, there's so much more.
I know. I was like, you're just getting started.
Yeah. And it's crazy because when I look back at the last couple of years, like, I feel like I went through the ringer and still am, but recounting it is definitely helpful because it's like, look at what you've achieved in such so little time. But honestly, slay. Like, go off.
Slay. No, for real. Because I remember when you decided to move to Chicago, we were all so excited for you. And then you finally did it and you started like making your little foot in the Chicago door. And honestly, like, you looked so much happier. You looked healthier. And I was just, this is a time where we stopped talking to each other as much, but obviously we were watching each other from afar. Yeah. And it felt like you were just reviving the soul, the little soul you had left, and like expanding that. And it was very, very nice to watch because I know it was like that light was so dim that entire time you were in Madison, and
totally,
it finally felt like that spark within you was like starting to like flicker a little bit.
Yeah, it's crazy because I feel like I barely made it out of there, but
yeah,
like I feel I've said this before too, where like when I started my culinary career, like when I started cooking, that's when I feel like my life began, because, you know, like we graduated school, we do our little jobs and whatever, and that's it. But I didn't have anything else that I was looking forward to, especially since I didn't have dance anymore or community. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, well, shit, like, let me do the thing that I've always wanted to do for me, because I don't have any obligations to anybody else anymore, especially my parents. Like, that was the biggest barrier. But yeah, I started working at this little caviar bar. My first job was shucking oysters. And then I got moved to the hotline and I was grilling. And then they promoted me to the research chef. So I was handling a lot of the operations. I developed a menu for the first time. I made my first dessert. Like, it was very, it happened very quickly. It was all within a year. And I was like, bitch, I'm good at this. I'm so good at this. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be, you know? Like, this is what feels good. It's not fuck my degree, but like,
like, but I don't really. Degree,
yeah. I mean, granted, having a food science degree helps with cooking, but the intuition that comes with cooking and the experience and the palate from being my parents' child and being around other diverse people growing up, like, it helps.
Yeah.
But
being creative with food is like such a talent that I can't even tap in. Like, when I watch cooking shows, I'm like, how would you think of that? Like, how did you, like, what made you think those flavors would be good? You know? So honestly, yeah, Slay Queen.
I definitely think that being a creative helped a lot too. Like, I think that like everything that I've done in my life leading up to this point has made me an excellent chef. And it's crazy because a couple of years ago, I was like, oh, I can't wait till I'm a chef. And then a year goes by and I'm calling myself a chef. I'm like, that was too quick and too easy.
Yeah. Like,
that's crazy.
Because it's the fact that you jumped into it and you just decided, fuck it, I'm just going to do it. And, you know, this is what I always, always quote from you, or quote from your therapist, fake it till you make it. And you you were like, I'm a chef, period. And then you became, you like really manifested that. And look at where you are now, which we haven't tapped in yet, but look at where you are now.
I know, totally. I mean, like, something that I've really reminded myself lately is that I am a master manifester. Like, everything that I've ever wanted, I've been able to have, because I just feel like when you are able to put your intentions out into the universe like that, like, that shit comes to you. Everything that you want is already yours, because if it's already yours, you already know what it takes to get there and what it takes to do it. It also takes being decisive. But yeah, I have so much to say about that too, because I think that there's also such a thing about negative manifestation, but I think that's for another time.
That is for another time.
But yeah, so I like was doing some really incredible things. Like, I had gone back to DC because I wanted to stage. And a stage basically is like an unpaid internship in the chef world, where like you go to a different restaurant and you like basically spend a couple of days in their kitchen to see how they operate and like learn whatever you can. So yeah, I told myself at the beginning of the year, I said to myself, like, I am going to stage at Moon Rabbit this year. Don't know anybody there. Don't know the chef.
Oh, like, the best restaurant, let me tell you.
I fucking love Moon Rabbit. Like,
oh, I love it.
Because you went to the new one, right?
Yeah, it's so good.
I heard the new one is better than the last one too. Yeah, but yeah, in my head, because it's like that's a restaurant that I really look up to, and that's a chef that I really look up to. And I was like, I'm gonna stage there. Period. That was a part of my New Year's manifestations. I also was like, I'm gonna stage at Tip Cow, which is one of the first Lao restaurants in America. And the chef there, Chef Sang, like, she's kind of considered the godmother of Lao cuisine, like, in America, because she like brought Lao cuisine over. But yeah, and then I went to DC. I like I slid into their DMs and I'm like, hi, my name's Alvis. Like, these are my aspirations. I really love what you're doing. Can I please come stage there? And they both were like, absolutely. So
bitch,
I'm just over here making shit happen.
Networking queen.
I know. So I went, amazing experience. Chef Sang, actually both of them like had such wonderful things to say to me as like an aspiring young chef, but Chef Sang especially, like the first day that I staged at her restaurant, she sat me down and ordered like everything on the menu, and she's like, we're just gonna sit here and get to know each other. Like, she's like, I want to know what your dreams are, and I'm gonna tell you how I made my dreams come true. And she asked me, she was like, tell me what you want. And I told her, I was like, I want to open a Vietnamese and Lao restaurant. Like, I want to bring Lao barbecue to the culinary world. I want to be innovative with Vietnamese cuisine. Like, I told her, like, I wanted to run a pop-up, stuff like that. And she goes, you can do it. I know you can. I don't even know this lady. Like, I do not know this lady. She does not know me. And she's like, you got it. You can do it. And I needed that shit at the time. Yeah. So, came back to Chicago, worked there for a couple more months, and then I took this random class that was like how to start a food business, and I like took it for shits and giggles, and I talked to the organizer after, and they're like, oh, we're giving out scholarships for our incubator program. Do you live on the west side? I was like, yeah. So I started the incubator program, and I started conceptualizing a concept, which went through three different iterations. And I was still working at my restaurant, but I could not do both. And eventually, yeah, I was like, you know what? This is calling to me, and this is unfolding way quicker than I thought it would. So I need to chase after it because the opportunity is here and I need to take it. It's like kind of echoing what we said before, like, it's not luck, it's because I was ready for it. I worked for it and it was here, so now I can take it. So yeah, I started my own business. It's called Ve Lai, which in Vietnamese means to return. It's a pop-up, and it focuses on the feeling of returning home to your parents and eating at their dinner table. So it's a lot of nostalgic Vietnamese and Lao cooking. Yeah, and I've been operating it for a year, and honestly, it's been tough. Like, being a fucking small business owner. Yes, I will be real about it, because I mean, you can see it, you know, like, being a small business owner in this economy and doing it by yourself takes everything out of you. Like, I've lost so much sleep. I was/am still anxious every day. Like, it is a lot of really hard work, but like, the thing I have to remind myself is that I've only been operating for a year. I've achieved some really incredible things. I was featured in the Chicago Reader. I got nominated for Best New Pop-Up. Like, I have like accolades, surprisingly. Uh-huh. And people really resonate with my food, and I get invited to do these things. And again, me living in Wisconsin, never would have thought that this life was possible. And even though it's hard now, I'm gonna look back at this time of my life and be like, damn, I really did that. That's crazy.
Uh-huh. So, no, you know what I think about too? Because you always complain how Chicago does not have the best Asian food. But what if one day people go there to Chicago and they're like, oh, the Asian food there sucks. But there's one place, and the chef there, Alvis, is amazing. Like, can you imagine that you become that bitch for Asian cuisine in Chicago?
I mean, I would love to become that bitch, because I don't know. I mean, I am that bitch, like, because I don't know what it is about Chicago, but like, it's a lot of things. It's the economy. It's like, it's also restaurants still recovering from the pandemic, and it's people switching the industries because they've basically found out during the pandemic that this line of work is not sustainable. If the world shuts down, you lose your job, you know, you lose everything. And it's scary times. And even now, there's that looming feeling of something happening, economic collapse, whatever. But I'm trying not to think about that right now, because that is something that's making me really anxious. But to the point I was trying to make, the Asian food here, particularly Korean and Vietnamese food, it's just not very good. But I also grew up in a place where it was excellent. So the bar is very high for
shout me. Shout out to the DMV.
Yeah, shout out to Annandale. Shout out to the Eden Center. All the places in Rockville.
I know, amazing. Seriously. I know, every single time Alvis comes back home, he's like, where are we eating? Please, I need it.
I mean, the last time I was back home, I was like, I know I just had Korean yesterday, but I want Korean again today. And the thing is, we would go to, I went to this new Korean restaurant, Korean barbecue restaurant, the last time I was back. It was in, it was near Mosaic. But it was amazing. And
what was it?
It starts with, a P...
I don't know.
There's so many. I know, yeah. But the thing is, there's so many, but they're all kind of good. So
they are good. They're very good.
But yeah, I feel like that's something that I've been missing. But yeah, so I definitely think that I've learned a lot this year, and I've been spending the last couple of weeks going through my finances, and honestly, I did take a hit, and it is hard trying to sustain myself. And I've been slowly coming out of this survival mode, because the last half of last year I was like, let me just do as much as I can, because I don't know if I can pay my rent. That's the scary part. But you know, I think that the resilience says a lot about it, and I have to remember that I'm gonna work really hard for the life that I want, because I'm not going back to corporate. I'm not going back to that life. But if I want this life, then I have to keep fighting for it.
Yeah, for sure. Wait, there was this one conversation we had about when you were talking to your therapist, and it was about how stressed you were with Velai. Mm-hmm. And I think about it all the time. And it was like, no matter how stressed you are, you'll be you won't be as unhappy as you were before. Oh my god, I don't remember what it was. I had felt something.
Oh, I did say that. I did say that to you guys the last time I was back. I said something like, you know, as stressful as my life is now, it will never be as stressful as this, which was living in Virginia, staying with my parents, being in that, feeling confined to that bubble, because there's just so much.
And the fact that this was it was a choice that you were making for the stress. Right. It was you were choosing to do this for your own life and your own success.
Right.
So,
right.
Yes, that always stuck with me, because I was you know what? Period.
Yeah. Period.
You may be broke, but you're not as unhappy as you were before.
It's so true. I mean, the stress of being financially unstable is never. It's never going to feel easy, but I know that this is not going to be a forever thing. So
yeah,
I think that there is a lot to say about how do you move forward with, I think the looming troubles of the current administration, that's definitely been on my mind, but I think it's okay to say that sometimes it's okay to put things on pause to find security and stability. But those are all things that I'm kind of sitting with right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But period. But, yeah, I think about it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much me, you know, we're all caught up. But I think something that I've been thinking about lately too is maybe this is also a conversation for a different episode, but what does it feel like having to rebuild a community around me now? Because I think that what I'm doing right now would have been a lot easier with the community that I had in the DMV.
For sure.
You know, that's years worth of developing this unconditional love and relationships with people. But here, I feel it's very isolating. And I think that a lot of people, we talked about this in a previous episode too, about making new friends. And I am good at making new friends, but a lot of people in their adult lives, they want to be, they want to show you that they're on their best behavior. And everybody wants it to look like they have their lives together, but everyone's too afraid to be vulnerable and be like, hey, I'm going through it and I need support. And maybe it takes a couple of years to develop that, but yeah, it's definitely felt very different with who is around me and who's supporting me now. And I do have a lot of supportive people around me now, but yeah. I do feel like I'm still building and putting down roots. Yeah. That's been the most difficult part for sure.
For sure. I mean, yeah, you grew up in Nova, so obviously you had those years of building that community. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I feel like you have a great enough support system to keep you afloat. Yeah. In Chicago, where I feel like, okay, I'm not worried about you. Because before in Madison, I was like, I'm worried about you. What the fuck is going on? But now, yeah. I feel like you have such a great support system, and I don't feel as, I feel more confident in just kind of watching you from afar and letting you do your thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because like, it's not like I'm alone.
Yeah. 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 Swooping in when I need to, and I feel so much more at ease and at peace watching you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's something else to say too about like the, it's not the quality of the people around me. I really love the community and the friends that I've built here, but it's kind of like what has being in this industry taken away from me, which is the time that it takes to really invest into relationships and to really feel connected to people. Because when I was working at the restaurant, I was working 11, 12 hours a day, sometimes 7 days a week. Like that shit's crazy. And then when I'm doing my pop-ups, especially through the summertime, there's always something next and I'm waking up and something's calling to me and I have to go. And I haven't had time to really do the things that I want to do. Granted, obviously this career choice is very personal, but I need more than that. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at now. I think that what we can both kind of talk about too is like looking ahead. What are some things that we want for ourselves? What are some manifestations that we have? I don't know if you did any New Year's reflections or anything like that, but is there anything that came up that you want to focus on this year?
Yeah, I feel like I want to focus on like me and Mati again. I think now that we have a toddler and we live really busy lives individually, even though we're under the same roof. I feel like, yeah, I want to reconnect with my man. And I I want to, because I feel like we're both in a really good place individually. And I feel like now that we're both individually happy in our lives, which is crazy because we both were able to do this while still living under the same roof, living the same routine and everything. But I feel like, it's really strange, honestly, that we were able to do that. I don't know how, and I don't know how that came about. But yeah, definitely this year, I feel like I just want to be a better partner emotionally and spiritually. I just feel like we both know that we're always there for each other, but I just, yeah, I feel like reconnecting with him is like my top priority. We've been spending a lot more family time, and we like really prioritize like pillow talk. But before, we were so tired that we both just kind of like, the baby went down to sleep, we just did chores and then went straight to sleep. So we're really prioritizing taking the time just for each other, which is really nice. So yeah, I feel like this year I just really want to be a better partner for Mati, because he is one of the greatest people that I know, and I feel like he deserves just like my absolute presence whenever he needs me. So I think that's my goal for this year.
That's so real. I mean, there's probably a lot to say about how being a parent will affect your relationship. You are now both pouring everything into this other living human being. So how do you find the balance of like being able to share that with your partner too. It's
yeah,
I would love to hear what you have to say about that in a different episode.
Yeah, it's a lot to get into, but yeah, that's definitely something that I'm actively working on, and just like being healthy. I think because it's really morbid to say, but because I'm the happiest right now, I've never been so afraid of dying. Like at first I'd be like, whatever, if the time comes, the time comes. But right now at this moment, I'm like, I don't want to die. I want to live life and grow old with Mati and be able to watch Keshi grow up and have his first date and go to his graduation and get his license. Like, I want to be able to do that. I feel like prioritizing my health and just who, like me physically, I felt like that was the number one thing this year as well. Just so I could just be the best self internally and externally, and just be healthy. But what about you?
I think I definitely have some really concrete goals too. I mean, health is definitely one of them. I think that my health really deteriorated the past 2 or 3 years working in the kitchen. Like, nobody really talks about watching your body and your bones and your joints just wear away. Like, there are some things that I physically cannot do anymore because working in the kitchen has destroyed my tendons. And
can
just
you
like,
still shake ass?
I haven't tried. I mean, probably not as much as, like, you know what? I barely have an ass anymore because I feel like I lost so much weight from just being on my feet all the time. And it's tragic.
So that should be your New Year's resolution, to shake ass.
Get a fat ass again. Both.
Both.
But yeah, my health is so important to me now too, especially with, like, I feel like we have seen a lot of our friends and family go through some very hard medical issues this year. Yes. And I definitely, it's at the forefront of my mind where I'm like, the decisions I make now are really, really important. So, and just trying to be physically active so I don't feel wrecked every time I do an event. And then, I mean, I would agree with the same sentiment of like being a better partner too. Like, spoiler alert, I have a man.
I was like, are we gonna bring him up?
I mean, soft launch, you'll hear more about him later, but I definitely think that, like, yeah, same sentiment where this job has again robbed me a lot of things in my personal life, and part of it is being a better and more romantic and more attentive partner because I'm over here just trying to survive, literally. But what does it look like for me to implement those things and prioritize those things and more in my life? And I would love to figure out what a new sense of like romance looks like between us and what like a more exciting and new things we can accomplish together. And I mean, I said I haven't been like, it just happened, but we've been together for 3 years.
I was like, why are you soft launching? Bitch, you guys have been together.
Yeah. Anyway, we've been together for 3 years. But aside from that, I had 3 main goals for this year. Like, I think I would call them pillars because I really want to hone in on these and whatever that looks like. And the first one was intention. I feel like in the last year, I really was doing everything I could and said yes to everything out of trying to keep my head above water, which is fair. And I forgive myself for it, for sure. But moving forward, I want it to feel good for me because I don't want to feel horrible again. So intention, self-assurance is another one. Like, I think that, like, there's a certain level of confidence that I used to have. And I think I could hear it in my voice in our last podcast episodes too, where I'm like, oh, like, she was confident. Like, she knew what she was doing. And she was a critical thinker. No. And I would love to make it back to that again, which I think that having this podcast will really help. Like, just being able to sit and be grounded with you and really think about, like, am I happy? Am I doing the right thing? I think having that be a shared experience is always really great. But self-assured so much in the way that I know who I am and what I want, and nobody can take that away from me. Because I feel like because I'm doing this thing that feels really, it's really romanticized, right? It's like, oh, you're following your dream, you're following your passions, but it comes with a lot of doubts, especially from other people. And I, like I said before, have to keep fighting for myself and keep believing myself, because at the end of the day, it's not those people that have to fight, it's me. And the last thing is creativity, because I've always been a creative in every aspect of my life. And now that I'm cooking, I do have some spaces to be creative, but not lately. So I would love to start just making shit up and playing with new flavors and even bringing dance back into my life in whatever capacity. I think that joy is really a big motivator for me this year. And I have so much to say about joy too, because I was having this conversation with Mia, and we were like, okay, so what does joy look like in our lives or in your life? And for me, I'm like, joy just isn't just laughing with your friends or going out and shaking your ass, which is like fun. But I told Mia, you know, joy is like sitting here and talking to you and feeling like I'm being heard. Like that means everything to me, and I feel so good doing it. So a very high priority for me.
Yeah, love it. Honestly, same. Ditto. Retweet. yours sound better than mine.
Yeah, I mean, we can do it together. Clearly, I mean, this is a source of joy for me too, like being able to reconnect with you, doing this podcast again, being able to talk about these things in detail, being emotional and vulnerable.
Yeah. We're just as vulnerable bitches with mics.
Two water signs.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of signs, I'm manifesting that 2025 is a good year, because I was also watching TikToks about the Chinese zodiac. And supposedly, since I am a rooster, that this year is a very good year for roosters for career growth and finance. So I'm like trying to manifest it.
No, that's tea, because I feel it too, because I think it's going to be it's a good year for dogs too, which is what I am. And I feel the wealth coming. Like, it's like, I'm going to work hard and the money's going to fucking come. Like, let's get it.
Yeah, shout out to our zodiac, Chinese zodiac. No, I feel it. Okay, well, we are now catching up to an hour and some change, so I think we're gonna wrap it up. But yeah, stay tuned. We're gonna have some more topics to discuss, and we really hope you all enjoy the second season.
Yeah, and if you have any, the plugs, girl.
Oh yeah, the plugs. I forgot the plugs. Okay, go. You go with the plugs.
Oh, yeah. If you have any questions or comments, or if you want us to talk about anything in particular, you can email us at brokenricepod@gmail.com, or just send us a DM on @brokenricepod on Instagram.
Yes, on Instagram.
Yeah, but yeah, that's it.
Thank you, everyone. Loves ya.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.